6 to 8.30 each weekday morning. Across Australia, you're with Fran Kelly, Radio National Breakfast.
On this Friday morning, the 15th of April, well, the Prime Minister has singled out welfare reform as one of the key features of next month's budget. Speaking to Radio National Breakfast yesterday, the PM said everyone who can work should work. But achieving that goal is no easy task. In a moment, we'll be joined by two guests to discuss the problems and the solutions, the challenges and the incentives needed. But first, let's meet Sarah. She doesn't want to give her last name, but she spent the last 2 years on and off the New Start allowance. Sarah says she'd like the PM to walk in her shoes and find out just how hard it is to get off welfare and into work. Sarah speaking with our reporter, Madeline Jenner.
There's a reason why I couldn't work. You know, I lost my best friend. She died, and I got major depression from that. I lost a job that I absolutely loved to death. Then the love of my life died, so it was just one after another thing. And then to try and slowly get back in again, it just was so much harder because of being knocked down. I didn't feel so confident, and I went for all these other jobs, and I wasn't getting them. And, you know, it was just a big whirlwind. And then I ended up with depression because I was just so depressed I couldn't get a job, not even a simple job. I've worked a lot of different jobs in my time, from being a nanny to picking grapes to being reception, the whole works. But I just couldn't get a job, and it was just so depressing and upsetting. And then, I couldn't even become a garbo. That's how depressing it was for me.
So on and off, you've been on New Start for the last couple of years. What's that experience like in looking for work continuously?
Hell, basically. I mean, anyone that I know that's, you know, lost a job and had to go to Centrelink to actually get money to pay their rent and to have food in their stomach, it is one of the most depressing things you can ever go through. You know, you absolutely feel worthless. And you're trying your heart out. Like, you know, you can go for 5 jobs during the day and you get nothing back and you start reflecting on yourself. What is wrong with me? I know I'm a good worker, but they're not seeing it. And then to go to the Centrelink office itself is really, really depressing. You know, for example, there are exceptions of some people in this world who do not want to work. There is this, you know, there is going to be an exception. But a lot of us do want to work, and it's just, you know, you walk out and it feels like you've hit your head against a brick wall again, and it's really upset. I used to come home and just cry every time I'd been at Centrelink because I just felt absolutely worthless.
Yet the unemployment rate is very low at the moment, and there will always be people who say, surely it can't be that hard to get a job. What's your response to people who think like that?
I used to have that attitude years ago when I was much younger and I was working flat out. I was like, just get a job, it's not that hard. And then, you know, life happens, and, you know, it's just life. I have been going every day on the net, every night I'm up until 2 a.m. going through the net, and I'm looking for work. And there's, you know, everyone wants a uni degree or they want this and that, and I didn't go to university, but I know, like, I'm a very smart person. I catch on very quickly, and it is so hard. Even just to get a job down at the corner shop pulling coffees now, is they want, you know, barista certificate here and this and that there, and it's so frustrating. And we just need support, basically. You know, as if anybody wants to live on the amount of money we actually live on each fortnight. If people knew what we actually lived on a fortnight, paying bills, everything, living and being able to feed yourself, they would be shocked.
Can I ask what you do earn on New Start?
I get $570 a fortnight to live on.
And is there a separate rental assistance payment, or is that everything?
That's all of it included in there. And then I'm lucky, and I don't live in the best possible place at the moment. I don't know any other word for it. It's cheap rent because it is such a not so good a place to live in. So I'm lucky in that way. But it's taken today. I just paid rent. It's $330 out of my pay of $570. So what I'm left with, I have to survive on that with buying food and then anything else that I need as well, and then bills that come up and medical things that come up that aren't covered by the government and things. So it's absolute hell.
The Prime Minister, Julia Gillard, is talking about welfare reform at the moment. What would you like to see from government? What would help you?
Just a lot more support, basically. I think they need to, I mean, being reception, if you need reception, you need computer skills, put us through a computer course. I mean, just give us those opportunities to build on skills that we may have already have a little bit of, build on them more so that we can go for those jobs that our careers. Like, Julie doesn't understand it because she, I don't think she's ever had to face anything the way that we have had to face it. And I think that's why she's going the way that she is, to be honest.
That's Sarah speaking with Madeline Jenner. Let's throw Sarah's challenge and the challenge facing all long-term job seekers to our panel of two this morning. Julian Disney is Director of the Social Justice Project at the University of New South Wales. And last year, he chaired an independent inquiry into the job seeker compliance framework. He joins us in the breakfast studio. Julian, good morning.
Good morning.
And David Thompson, CEO of Jobs Australia, the umbrella group which represents not-for-profit employment agencies. David, welcome to you.
Good morning, Fran.
Now, we just heard from Sarah there, and one of the key problems she faces when looking for work is her skills base. She wants to have more help in getting real skills. Julian Disney, is that the key issue facing long-term unemployment, the long-term unemployed, their lack of skills?
For a lot of people, but it's important to bear in mind that in many ways the best way of developing skills after an initial degree of help is to get into paid work experience. So paid work experience is crucial. Just training, and especially if, as often happens in the moment, it's inappropriate training or just repetition of the same training is not enough. And in order to help them through the process, they not only need some training and experience, but they really need individualised, sustained advice from a person of experience and who stays with them to help them through the different processes, but also to engage with the employers, etc. Sometimes the employers will need assistance and advice as to how to work with the person concerned.
So you're talking about a caseworker?
Yes.
David, you are CEO of Jobs Australia there, representing not-for-profit employment agencies. In those agencies are caseworkers, and those agencies are paid, as I understand it, to give training. Why isn't Sarah getting the training she needs?
Well, as Julian said, it's important that not only is there training, but it's the right kind of training, both in terms of what it's about and the way it's delivered. Of those people that have been on Newstart for more than a year, something of the order of two-thirds of them haven't completed Year 12. Lots of them have literacy and numeracy problems, as well as lacking basic employability skills, and I think Julian's right. The system needs to deliver more to them in terms of the right kind of training to help them get a job, and then to continue that process with paid work experience and in the actual workplace.
Well, obviously, you know, you don't know Sarah, only what you heard there, but she, for instance, was saying there she needs to do a computer course or something like that. Do the employment agencies have the funds and the capacity to offer something like that?
In some cases, yes, they do, and in other cases, they can access other programs like the government's Productivity Places program. But that's not very well integrated with the employment services system, and it's in need of significant work. So it's in that instance, it may well not be a case of the government needing to provide more resources, but just to use them more cleverly.
There's not much money, is it, living on Newstart? It's $570 a fortnight there, and Sarah's rent's pretty cheap, $330 for a fortnight, you'd think. I don't know if that's a fairly typical breakdown of the funds, of how people spend their funds, but it makes it difficult to have any kind of mobility, and therefore, over time, that would erode your confidence, it would erode your capacity to go out and be job ready, to look job ready. Is that an issue for people who are out of work for a long time?
It certainly is. No one's living the life of Riley on $34 a day, and particularly when they're in the private rental market. And you'll hear people tell you things like they can't afford things like a cup of coffee, a haircut is a luxury that they can ill afford, clothing is something that's just way out of contention for them. And even august institutions like the OECD have observed that the rate of payment for unemployed people in Australia is unsustainably low and needs to be lifted.
Julian Disney, do you think the government understands who the long-term unemployed are, and therefore when they're coming up with policies, both sides now coming up with policies, and we'll hear more in the budget, that they're targeting them correctly because they understand the client group?
No, I think there's a bit of a time warp here. I think the face of poverty is very different now from what many people believed it to be, and perhaps what it was when they were young. In the past, many people, I'm going back 20 or 30 years, and that's the time span for some of our leading politicians, people in many cases just lacked income. They had supportive parents and a functioning family. They had skills, inherent skills. They were just short of money. Nowadays, it's very different. A lot of the people who are the most disadvantaged are, for example, people with significant disabilities, either physical or mental, and they're people often who've come from dysfunctional families. So we need a much more individualised form of assistance, a deeper form of assistance than in the past. But I think the other thing to say is there's a tendency to focus too much on a very small proportion of the group who are rorting the system, but in fact not to focus on them very effectively. You know, in many ways, what a lot of the system does at the moment is harass the innocent and not, in fact, stop the guilty. And the inquiry you mentioned that I chaired proposed a way of trying to make that distinction more effectively. And that means boosting the resources available of people who will be making that distinction, people who will be meeting with those who seem to be not complying with their requirements, and distinguishing between those who need a lot more help and those who are just rorting the system.
So more money for the workers sorting out the employment agencies, and more money for the programs to support people. Let me ask both of you, because both of you have worked in this and around this policy area for a long time. David, you first. Are there programs that are working that need expansion?
Yes, I think there are, and the government's made some significant advances in terms of bringing into this active assistance system people who are very disadvantaged. The system's delivering more and better results for those people. And I think Julian's perfectly right. What we need to do is to stop wasting compliance and hassling resources on people who genuinely need a hand, to provide more and deeper assistance for those people in terms of paid work experience, quality training, working with employers to help keep them in work and so on. And there are a number of pilots where various elements of that are being tried around the country and have been tried in the past. And I think, in effect, we know what will work. The government's got the very difficult and complex job of actually trying to recraft this incredibly complex system to make that happen.
Let me ask Julian Disney about this idea of paid work experience, because, you know, employers might be happy, they need people, we all know that, but they need people who can do the job. What sort of pay would we be offering someone to take someone on who's not quite skilled yet?
Firstly, Fran, I just want to emphasise, I would actually hassle the rorters, but we'd need to be better at selecting who the rorters
are.
So I do Understood. Believe in being tough on them. As to what subsidy you provide, well, that will vary, of course, according to the nature of the job. But in many ways, what they'll want more, actually, employers, in addition to any wage subsidy, is the feeling that they're going to have assistance in how to, in a sense, engage this person in the workforce. I think to expect employers to take all this on their own, to work out how to engage them effectively, how to provide them or link with the support they need, is often asking too much. So money a bit, but more importantly for the employers to know there will be a mentor available to engage with the worker and with whom the employer can engage.
And is there one single program that you're aware of that is working?
There are small ones around that agencies have done over time, and one of the problems is that when these schemes get going, as they have over the years, paid work experience schemes, mentor schemes, they then... We keep swapping the programs and swapping the forms of assistance as new ministers and new governments come in. And often it's just when something is starting to hit pay dirt, as it were, starting to get the long-term savings out of this that you can get with the upfront investment, that's when we change things. And these programs are starved of funds, or when they're put on funds initially, they're just put on as pilot programs, which makes it much harder to work them effectively.
Well, maybe we're coming to that point again. But look, we're almost out of time. Just briefly to both of you, both Julia Gillard and Tony Abbott are talking about the needs of the mining industry. We are screaming out. We've got a skill shortage in this country. Places need workers. Is it feasible for people who are long-term unemployed to take up these mobility grants that Tony Abbott is talking about, or Julia Gillard says the government already has some form of? David Thompson?
For a small proportion of them who've got the right skills, it might be an option, but the take-up of the current initiative being offered by the government would seem to indicate it's not going to be an answer for an awful lot of them. They don't have the skills, and as we've identified, a lot of them have some other barriers that mean they're not likely to be suitable for some of that work.
Julian?
Oh, well,
if there's work there, should people have to go and take the job?
Well, we should strongly encourage them, and I mean strongly, but we have to encourage them. One of the key points is the second point David made, which is it's not just money, it's actually support. Again, it's because many of these people now are different from the kind of unemployed person in the past. They need personal support. So if they go up to, you know, Northwest Australia or whatever, they're going to need other support as well to help them through this process. They're often personally in quite considerable distress of one kind or another, limitations, and we need to help them. If we see this whole thing as a short-term savings measure, then you can be sure that it will fail. Okay. It's a long-term savings measure, but not a short-term one.
Okay, we'll continue talking about this up to and after the budget. I'm sure, David Thompson, just before I let you go, with your experience, what sort of money per individual should the government be looking at budgeting? Can you give us a round figure?
That's quite difficult because we're talking about a whole lot of really different kinds of people. And as I said, there's already a lot of money in the system that could be used very differently. But I think we should be looking at the kind of savings that will be made if we can get these people long-term off income support and out of the need for employment assistance. That's the sort of numbers we'd be talking about.
All right. David Thompson, Julian Disney, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Julian Disney is Director of the Social Justice Project at the University of New South Wales, and David Thompson, CEO of Jobs Australia, the umbrella group which represents not-for-profit employment agencies. It's 8:21.